Between the Lines on News Talk.
Welcome to this special edition of Between the Lines, with me, Steve Daunt, standing in for Andrea Gilligan today.
This is a poem about
living with a disability.
This
is a big moment for Irish commercial radio. As you will hear only the voices of disabled people. Both as guests and as a presenter. Later in the show, I am joined by a panel to discuss what it means to be disabled in Ireland today.
What it means to be disabled in Ireland today.
But first, I'm delighted to be joined by Robin Barnett, the UK ambassador to Ireland.
Robin Barnett, the UK ambassador to Ireland,
who has a very special interest in disability.
Welcome, Robin.
Hello, Steve. It's great to be with you, and I'm really grateful for the invitation.
We better start
with your personal interest. You were born with a disability?
Absolutely. I was born with something called hemiplegia, which meant that the right side of my body is only partly functional. It took quite a while before people really realized what the problem was. It was certainly not picked up when I was first born. So it began to have a real impact on my life, I think, probably when I was about 3 or 4 years of age.
I saw a video you tweeted to mark last year's UN Day, and you openly said you were a victim of teasing and bullying as a child. What was that like?
I have to say, incredibly difficult to start with. I felt vulnerable. I felt very alone. When someone comes up to you and says, how you're doing, hop along, it doesn't make you feel great. But what I learned to do was to adapt. I tried, first of all, to fit in. So I was hopeless at football, but I went and played football with everybody else. And I think that certainly helped somewhat. But the reality was I did a second thing, which was both good and bad. I built a hard shell around myself so that when people were making unpleasant remarks, they kind of bounced off. But I think if you do that, it also has real implications for the way you handle personal relationships. So it was, I have to say, quite tough.
Was there a particular moment where you thought, that's it? This is who I am, let's get on with it.
Absolutely. When I was about 6 or 7, an NHS consultant in the UK said I needed to do swimming all the year round. My mum said, we haven't got the money to pay for that. So I was granted access to a hospital swimming pool. The fascinating thing about that was that nearly everybody else in the swimming pool were thalidomide victims, because this was, of course, back in the 1960s. So there's me with a bit of a weakness on one side and nearly everybody else with no arms and no legs. In a funny way, that's probably the best thing that ever happened to me, because when you've experienced people with really challenging disabilities, you realize, actually, if they can live amazing lives, I certainly can. So from that moment on, I thought, I can't afford a chip on my shoulder. I've just got to get out there and get on with it. Some people have described me as quite determined. And if I had to date back that determination, I would date it back absolutely to those hours spent in a swimming pool with thalidomide victims.
Would you agree that the actual challenge that disabled people face is not allowing people to define them by their particular condition, yet making sure society facilitates their needs as citizens?
Absolutely agree with that. For me, people need to be treated as individuals. We all have the same passions. We all have the same ambitions, and we should never be defined by a particular condition. On the other hand, it's also absolutely essential that we help people with disabilities to fulfill their potential. That means addressing issues like access. It means addressing issues like making sure the right assistive technology is available. And most of all, it means making sure that people give an equal chance to somebody, irrespective of the fact that they may have a disability of some kind. Some of the most extraordinarily talented people I've ever met are people with disabilities. One great example would be Paralympic athletes. I had a lot to do with them in both Romania and in Poland. And these are people I used to call superheroes because they compete with the same ferocity as their Olympic colleagues, but have to do so under much more challenging circumstances. And frankly, quite often with a fraction of the budget that's devoted to Olympic athletes.
Between the Lines on News Talk.
Welcome back to this very special edition of Between the Lines with me, Steve Doig. Sitting in for Andrea Gilligan. This is a program about living with a disability in Ireland.
A disability in Ireland.
Before I get to my panel, let me tell you a bit about myself. When I was 15, I confessed to an egregious
sin.
I told an occupational therapist that I wanted to be a journalist. The person's reaction was telling.
Journalism?
Sure, you only type with one finger. She had the good sense not to mention my sexy baritone voice. So that's something. I never saw this person again. But after meandering through life, I am now 13 years a hack. So what does that fable tell you?
About being a disabled person in Ireland.
Well, you are going to hear the C word a lot.
C word a lot. Can't.
To succeed,
you
develop a very thick
skin.
You ignore people. You develop the smile of an
assassin.
As you plot your way through the world.
But this does not
mean
I'm a card-carrying
member of the Let's See the Ability and Disability Team. No.
I am
disabled. There's no hiding from that. I do need certain things to make life
easier.
And if you get that, you will be able to go on a beautiful
journey.
But I am disabled.
I am disabled. I can't hide it.
Really, I cannot hide it. But I'm also a son. A brother. A lover. A journalist. A box set binge viewer. A sports fan. And whatever I am on a certain day. Over the next hour, you're going to hear from a panel of people with as many identities as I have just described. Instead of me introducing them, I'm going to start with a quick fire round. Where you all have 30 seconds to introduce yourselves. Let's start with you.
Lucky me. I'm Louise Bruton. I'm a journalist, a freelance journalist, and I mostly write for the Irish Times, Image, and Lonely Planet. I'm also a DJ. According to Steve, I'm a party animal. So, I write a lot about disability, and I try to encourage social activities to be as accessible as possible, so people can be as young and as reckless as they like to be, just like everybody else.
Padraig Nocton. My day job is as executive director of Arts and Disability Ireland. We work with artists and audiences with disabilities. I'm married to Avril and we live in Artane, and I've two girls, Grace and Christina, 10 and 8. And then my wife has two older children who live with us as well. And they're practically grown up, one's in college and the other one's working. And I suppose I've a long background in the arts, and that's where I would have started. And I suppose eventually it led on to my work with Arts and Disability Ireland, because I was the artist with a visual impairment, which back in the 90s was a strange combination.
Hi, I'm Mara Madani. I'm a communications intern with Independent Living Movement Ireland.
Hi, my name is James Cawley. I am 26 and I'm from Longford. I suppose my day job is policy officer with the Independent Living Movement Ireland. I'm the youngest of 9, so I suppose that's what's led to me having thick skin and my resilient nature. I think that's really, really important in Ireland, where it's not really equipped for every disabled person.
Who was I at 15, or who is my 15-year-old self? God, I was, I think back then you would have said I was SWAT, probably more nerdy than SWAT though. I was very into music and very into radio. Pirate radio was a big thing in Ireland at the time, and that was one of the things I followed a lot, because there were, it was an exciting time because stations opened and closed, and they got closed by the guards and they opened someplace else. And it was an interesting time. I was in boarding school in Dublin. I had been since the age of 4 and a half. And I think that made me a particular type of person. I also was quite, I suppose, in some ways frustrated, because at that point in my life, I was in St. Joseph's, now Child Vision, where I was a boarder and went to public school Rosmini. But in many ways, even at 15, I wanted to kind of shake off that disability thing because I felt very trapped and controlled by it. And I suppose that was best signified by the fact that I actually wasn't living in my own home area. I was actually living in Dublin, away from home. And I would say, coming up to my 50th birthday next year, I have never actually re-established or ever got back to having that link that most people, I think, in Ireland, growing up in their home communities, actually have.
James, as a person also from the country, does Perig's teen years ring true?
Yeah, so I suppose, as I said, I'm the youngest of 9 children, so my parents kind of didn't really treat me any differently at all. And they're just kind of treated me as one of the 9 and just get out there, fight for your spuds, do everything. If you couldn't kick a ball, go out and crawl after it, etc. So it was that model of normalisation. Different to Pork, I was locally educated in the local national school. But that was a time when there was no special needs assistance. So I was actually looked after by my first year by FOS workers. And then the introduction of the SNA, I got my first SNA. But with saying that, having support in education was really, really important, having that SNA to enable me to do things. But it was really, really important for me to be able, for the SNA to be able to step back as well and allow me to get down on a Friday and play a crawling tag like with all my classmates and to just integrate myself fully into school as well. But again, yeah, I suppose I was encouraged to do everything, get stuck in and not sit back and let things just go in front of my eyes.
Louise, what about your teen years? Can you identify with the lads?
I grew up in Maynooth. I had my primary education in Maynooth, but then my secondary education was in Dublin. And I was meant to go to school a lot closer to my home. But after I was born, my mum had wanted to put myself and my sister in the same secondary school. And the principal of the secondary school closer to my home asked my mother, who had just had a newborn baby, how would it benefit the school to have a disabled child? So my mum immediately was like, that's the end of that school. And we ended up, myself and my sister Laura, we ended up going to school in Dublin. So commuting to school, we used to leave our house at 10 to 7 every morning, which is terrible. Don't recommend it to anybody. So I was on crutches for all my life. I only started using a wheelchair when I was about 24. So using crutches and being in kind of a mainstream school, I had to kind of make do with the facilities that were available. And there wasn't a huge amount of understanding of what I needed. So my school had 6 floors, not all accessible by a lift. And between the ages of 12 and 21, I had so many surgeries on my spine and then kind of repairing surgeries for the damage they did to the spinal surgeries. And I also had my foot amputated when I was 17. So I had a whole psychological whirlwind going on top of being a very angsty teenager. So it was quite difficult in a way because I was trying to, I was quite a kind of an outspoken teenager. So I had to deal with that on top of the fact that I wasn't necessarily very comfortable with being disabled, which is something I came around to in my 20s. But in my teen years, it was a huge amount of denial, but also trying to be outspoken.
Was there any moment when you knew you had to fight as a disabled woman?
The big fight, I think, came for me when I was in university. I had had 2 spinal surgeries in my final year of college because I was having chronic back pain. That meant that I wasn't sleeping, wasn't eating, and that tends to not bode very well with your general condition of life. And I was unable to attend most of my lectures, and I found that I wasn't having, I didn't have the brain capacity to actually work on my thesis properly. And I asked to defer a year, but I ended up getting a thesis extension. But in the great glory of a lot of universities, I was never actually given a date for that extension. So I panicked and submitted the thesis on the original date as the rest of my classmates, and then became this huge kind of furore of not having had the facilities provided for me. The only assistance I had in university was free printing, and that was it. So everybody printed their thesis with my account, which is, you know, fantastic. But I was going through a very kind of mentally difficult time then, And when I got the results of my thesis, I wasn't happy with it. And when I appealed it, my options were either take the result or repeat the year entirely, even though I had initially requested to defer the year. So that was one of those things, one of those kind of eye-opening experiences that made me realise that the world that non-disabled people live in just can't understand the world that disabled people live in when they refuse to listen to what we need. So I think that was what kind of started me becoming more active with disability advocate activism.
Maryam, you're a millennial kid. Do anything of the things you've heard resonate with you?
Absolutely, it all resonates very much with me. One of the things one of our board members, Sarah, has said is that all disabled people do seem to do from the cradle to the grave is fight. And I developed quite severe depression from the age of 13. A lot of that, I'm still on antidepressants. A lot of the depression was caused by also denial about my disability. I also, same as you, Louise, I didn't start using a wheelchair until I was about 21. So most of my life I was like trying to pass as normal and like fighting to, you know, compete in a normal world and absolutely denying that I had difficulties. And I've come to believe that a lot of that is due to our, you've probably all heard about the supergroup model, and its exact opposite is villain. You know, like those are the two main stereotypes of disabled people that you see in the media. And what that does is that it makes disability an individual problem that's to be overcome. So we're used to seeing disability as something that is a personal challenge that you either succeed at overcoming and become a super crip, or you can't manage that and you end up becoming like a bitter villain. But the reason that that's so problematic is it takes away from the idea of disability as being caused by social barriers and things that are preventing us from surviving in the world. And it takes away from the idea of being able to talk about disability from a rights-based perspective, because we're constantly seeing it as an individual thing. One of the very famous slogans for the supercrip is, "The only disability is a bad attitude." So I think a lot of disabled people are struggling with a lot of guilt and shame if we are having difficulties in our lives and if we can't overcome all of those problems. One of the reasons I love Independent Living Movement Ireland is that it focuses on the social model of disability, which is the idea that disability is caused by the social factors and social barriers. And if we learn to stop seeing disability as a case of something that's, you know, you're an inspiration for overcoming or you're a failure for not, and we look at uniting together as a movement to overcome structural inequality, that also is more empowering than people feeling isolated separately on their own, struggling to overcome their personal difficulties.
Okay, we're going to take a break there. You're listening to Between the Lines on News Talk with me, Steve Daunt.
Between the Lines on News Talk.
Have any of you had the "you're a great friend but" line?
Yeah, it went on for years. Yeah, no, I jokingly said to my wife recently that I think, you know, after acquiring the kind of the wife, the house, the children, there were many more opportunities for affairs than there ever were for dates. Because I do think, I don't know, maybe things have changed, because I suppose I was dating in the maybe 90s and into the early 2000s. But what I found was that it was with some of those normal trappings of life that actually then sort of gave me credentials and cred, which is kind of strange. But that's the way it felt. I felt I had loads and loads. I was never short of platonic relationships and friendships over the years. And sometimes I found it very hard to negotiate and read my way through what was platonic and what wasn't. And I found it quite tedious.
How do you counter that?
I don't know. I think you just plow ahead and essentially, you know, you do find people in your life that take you seriously. And, you know, I know in the case of my wife, she's one of those people who takes me very seriously, but she takes no crap either. And that's how I know she takes me seriously. And that's, I think, a really important thing for me is to find people in my life who are to found friendships where people take me seriously for who I am and we can be on a level. But sometimes that takes time.
I think dating culture is a new thing in Ireland in general. So Irish people are appalling at it.
Oh my God.
It's something we're all kind of, we're in the toddler years of dating in Ireland because it really only became, it used to just shift in the bar and then see what happened later on. But now because of the introduction of dating apps, people are now actually doing the formal thing of dating, asking people out. I think with choosing when to when to disclose that you have a disability, I think you should go from the get-go because it is actually there's a very strange silver lining in it where you kind of, you weed out who's good and who's bad quite early on.
Yeah.
And like, I will say my good experiences way tower over the bad experiences, like maybe in my entire life, like maybe there would have been two men who would have taken a not so favorable approach towards my disability, but the rest of it is just fine. And I think people just, there has been a fear that has been created, and in the same way when anyone is creating a dating profile, you have to be brave in promoting yourself because that's what you're doing, you are promoting yourself, and people have hang-ups and you just kind of have to kind of like go on. That's it.
Yeah, I think I agree as well with Louise, like definitely from the get-go. Like I did both actually, like Mariam said, I kind of put up a picture with me without my wheelchair, and this is when I was going through a bit of a phase of will I put it up or not? And then I said, why? Why would it bother? Because at the end of the day, it cuts through all of that. The person that you actually want to spend time with is the person that you enjoy being with. You know, so I like that. I think it comes down to around disability and pride. I've been proud to be disabled. And when I got over that issue of, will I, won't I just like that, ploughed on and said, no, I am who I am. If they don't like me, let them off. And just on that point as well, online dating, like, as I said, I put it up that I was disabled, pictures, etc. And I met my fiancé online, so there is success stories out there. Well, I still have 6 months to go to marriage, so we'll see. But no, I think definitely, you should definitely, straight up, you're disabled, yeah. That's it. It's who you are. It's part of your identity. So I think it's vitally important.
I love how we keep saying plow on with this. Certainly, plow on. Yeah.
On that note, I'd like to bring this edition of Between the Lines on News Talk to a close. My thanks to the panel for sharing their experiences. This show wouldn't have happened without the Between the Lines team. That includes Simon Keane and Neil Kavanagh. And of course my editor Stephen Jordan. Who really took me out of my comfort zone. By asking me to present the program. Thanks to Andrea for allowing me to sit in this seat. She'll be back next week. So on that note...
Between the Lines on News Talk.